You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 20th of April, 2018. It's Adolf Hitler's birthday and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. And of course, since it's Friday and it's Truth Will Out Radio, we are joined by the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine today. I think he was 129, isn't he, today, for his birthday?
Well, he was born in 1889. My maths is probably nowhere better than yours. 89, 99. Actually, I make him 117.
Okay. I wasn't that far out.
We're probably both wrong, but we are right about what we have to say about the man, because he was an absolute hero of the white race. And we've got a list of subjects, topics to discuss tonight, notable things that Adolf Hitler did. And there are so many of them, I doubt whether we're actually going to be able to get through all of them, to be honest. And we talk about some of the things that he did, and we've probably discussed most of them in our podcasts over the years, but we've never actually put them all into one podcast, I don't think. And the first one that I've got here is one that we've mentioned recently and that you've been highlighting a lot in your new series, Dennis, and that is that he removed Freemasonry, which is, do you want to talk a bit more about that?
Well, I mean, a lot of what he did then really reflects more today, because things have obviously, with the internet, have opened up more. And especially for myself, didn't really know that much about Freemasonry on this, until I did this series. Quite eye-opening, really, that he knew what he knew at a time when there was no internet. And that was one of the reasons, obviously, he moved Freemasonry, because it is a tool of the Jews, and, at its core, it represents communism. And the guy was just way ahead of his time. I mean, there are other countries removed him as well, but he was the one really leading the way.
There really wasn't that many people speaking about it. I think I can remember that there was somebody called Nestor Webster who wrote a book exposing conspiracies. But when you look at Henry Ford, he mentioned nothing about it at all, did he?
Well, he was a Freemason himself, which goes to show that not all Freemasons understand what Freemasonry is all about. It is disguised in many layers, where people are obviously thinking it's one thing, but it's disguised, and the more you look into it, the more evil it gets.
And one idea that the Germans had was that Freemasonry had started off as an innocent fraternity, an innocent brotherhood, and that it had got corrupted over time by the Jews. Whereas E. Michael Jones, in his studies today, I mean, he says it was corrupted right from the very beginning. It was modelled on the Jews and Jewish ideas right from the very start.
Well, I mean, the first lodges were the temple, weren't it? Herod's temple.
Well, they call them temples, don't they? They say it goes back to...
change the name.
They call it lodges now, but they say it goes back to Solomon's temple, don't they?
Yeah, so he's got a good point. I mean, someone was asking me about the founding fathers, and I actually said, I don't think that the Illuminati at that point had infiltrated, but I never liked Freemasonry anyway, because for three reasons. It's kind of like a secret society is divisive, and it's like elitist, and it leaves you alienated. So it's not a good thing to have.
Not a good idea to have secret societies within any society. They've obviously got something to hide, or they wouldn't be secret. In Athens, it was illegal to have any meetings that weren't in public. Say anything that wasn't in public. If you've got something to say, you can say it to everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, he didn't just remove Freemasonry. He also removed the Jews from power. That's probably the most famous thing that he's most famous for. As I say, he removed the Jews from power, but he didn't do it in a nasty way. I mean, the ones that were held positions of influence, like the ones that were politicians, they were just asked to leave their positions, but they were given full pensions. You know, it wasn't like they were suddenly stripped of all their goods or demoted. They were just told that they had to take early retirement. You know, they weren't treated anywhere near as badly as we're told, were they?
No, that's right. I mean, at the end of the day, his aim really was to destroy the Versailles Treaty, and he practically did it with a drop of blood being spilled. It was only when he came to Poland where, you know, circumstances forced him to take military action. But up to that point, he was dismantling that treaty, which was the death sentence to Germany, as it was, quite peaceably. And even the transfer agreement was the only means of getting the Jews out of Germany peaceably, because only Palestine, Jews down in Palestine wanted them. So he tried to do everything as best as he could, peaceably as he could. But when you're backed into a corner, you're backed into a corner.
Well, we've also got the beer hall push, and that ended up with a few people getting shot, and it ended up with Adolf Hitler in prison where he wrote Mein Kampf. And while he was there, he said, well, this isn't the way to take power. We need to do things by legal means and by democratic means. Even though they were against, you know, where democracy is going to lead us, they used legitimate democratic means to get voted into power. And a lot of people are unaware of that today. They think that it was a dictatorship and he just took power by force. He didn't. He was voted into power. So it was a bloodless revolution. Well, and that's a very rare thing for that to happen. And that
gives an time.
and that gives an idea that it's going to succeed. Gaddafi's revolution, the Green Revolution, that was bloodless as well, and that succeeded for 30 years or however long it was. No, it wasn't as powerful as the National Socialist one. It just shows you that it can be done without there being blood. I mean, he didn't even shed any animals' blood. And this is one of the ones that you listed, Dennis. He gave rights to animals.
Yeah, and I have a video up on YouTube somewhere, which actually shows the horrific death of animals caused by Jews creating kosher food, eating animals. You know, they have to have a certain way of death, and quite cruel. And he refused to go down that road and changed everything. And I think probably for the first time in history. I can't remember anybody else giving that animal rights.
And what was it exactly he did? Did he prevent people from experimenting on them, put laws into place to make sure that there was humane ways of killing them? What was it exactly that he did?
Well, obviously, you know, the way that the Jews demonstrates this, I mean, not many people can watch the video, to be honest. It is quite horrifying. When they slit the cow's throat and the blood gushes out and then... the animal rides around in obvious pain for a number of minutes while they bleed to death. And it's just a horrible, horrible way to die. And I know some people have their own views on it, but certainly Adolf Hitler and myself felt the animal was suffering. And so he protected them because they can't protect themselves, obviously, in that situation. And obviously the Jews and the Muslims would have been quite annoyed at it because this is how they kill the animals.
Well, they still do it today, don't they? The Muslims with their halal slaughter. I think they've stopped it in Denmark. One of the countries in Europe has been brave enough to put a stop to it, but it should be stopped everywhere. It's horrific what they do.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he had a compassionate heart for animals should tell people a lot about the guy.
Well, yeah, I mean, they say that people that torture animals go on to be psychopaths. I mean, there was a lot of talk about George Bush torturing animals when he was a child some years back. And it's a commonly known thing that if people treat animals badly, then they're going to be mental cases. And what we've got here is a case of the complete opposite of it and way ahead of his time as well. I mean, we have rights to protect animals now in the EU, but nobody else did back then in the 30s and 40s.
No, at that time, no. An animal was just less than human to most people, weren't it?
Well, moving on from the animal rights, he also gave children rights. He prevented any children from being born with deformities. Yep. He did his very best to prevent children being born with limbs missing or mentally deficient. He wanted children to be born, given the best chance possible than to be born into the healthiest body with the healthiest mind and the potential to be great German citizens serving their nation. And that's something that we don't even have today. Children don't have the right to be born into a healthy body. And they did back then.
Well, it's interesting because at the moment there's a case in Liverpool where Alder Hey Hospital, there's a child there and the parents are insisting that he can get the treatment to save him in Italy. And the British courts have ruled that they've decided that he can't go. And this brings us right back to the basis of our civilization in England anyway. Whereas what people don't realize is when they sign that birth certificate, they give up all rights of that child. And so when the court says, you know, you can't do this, what the court is actually saying, you can't do this to my child. And people don't realize.
Yeah, we've given up all God-given rights and exchanged them for rights and privileges from the state. And if it comes from the state can take them away.
Well, that's what a privilege is, isn't it? A privilege is, you know, you're privileged to have this or not.
Yeah, they call it rights, but that's all it is. And the way that we'll talk about this today, they'll say, oh, how mean and horrible he was. He sterilized disabled people. He allowed them to have the euthanasia. But what the reasoning for that was to protect children. And it worked.
Yeah. And it wasn't that simple anyway. I mean, there was he'd have to go through a section of court cases, you know, to actually come to a decision. It weren't just made on a whim, where the parents or the guardian of the child had to kind of make the case for it. I mean, in a case where a child or a person was brain damaged to a point where his life was just vegetation, then after these series of court cases, the judge would then decide whether or not, would be better for the life to end.
Yeah, it had to be done with the parents' permission, first and foremost. The parent or the guardian's permission. It wasn't like they just went out sterilising people.
Like they're portrayed.
No, and you can see, but by the way that he interacts with children, that they loved him for that.
Oh, yeah.
And, you can really see that, the look on the children's faces. There's genuine adoration for him that you wouldn't get normally. You know, it's like beyond normal adoration that children had for Adolf Hitler. In some way, they sensed it, I think.
I think that's right. And when you compare that to pictures of, say, Biden or Obama at the time when they were cuddling children, that would give a far more creepier effect. Well, because the kids were backing off, so they were sensing something.
Yeah, they're shrinking away from it. They can sense these things. I mean, you can just look at the pictures of the time, and you can see that he was a good man. And from doing this, from preventing children from being born deformed and doing their best to eradicate genetic diseases, they improved the racial hygiene of Germany. They improved the hygiene of the entire nation. And also by encouraging people with the best genes and the highest IQs and the most talents to breed with other people with the most talents. I mean, that's what part of what the SS was about, building a new aristocracy.
Yeah, funny you say that. I was listening to Mike King, I think it was, the other night talking about it. And he was saying the difference between the British soldier and the German soldier, even though, you know, after only a few years, so the Germans had got themselves together and the country back on the feet again. The actual physiques and the health of the German soldier far superior to what the British one was.
Well, you have to start in the womb, don't you? After a child is born, that's it. That's all you've got to work with is what you've got there. So if it's born sickly or it's born with genetic problems, then you're just going to be struggling all the time to put them right. So the way to do it is to get the mothers really, really healthy and give them the right foods and the right nutrition and give them good prenatal care so that they've had the very best they can before they're even born. And then, then you work on what you've got. And instead of having to clear up the mess and repair the diseases and repair the genetic damage, then you can work on educating the child and finding what skills and talents they've got. And they invested in exercise and good education. We've all seen the videos of them outside exercising. And what do they do today? They've sold off all the playing fields.
Yeah, certainly have.
You know, you don't pay any attention to it anymore. So you had a combination of getting the right people to breed together, sterilizing the wrong people. And they sterilized habitual criminals and alcoholics as well. You know, they knew that to commit crime, there's a genetic predisposition to committing crime, and they had worked that out. And they've admitted that today. And this is why you get families of criminals, of lifelong career criminals, because it's a genetic predisposition. They isolated that and prevented that from happening. So the Germans were gradually improving, as we do with every other breed of animal we have. We try to improve the breed. And yet with human beings, we just allow them to breed with whoever they like, which is dysgenic. Yeah, it's totally dysgenic. Well, moving on to the actual system that they had, he showed that you can have a system without usury in it. He removed the usury.
Big time, big time. That was probably the biggest fear of the bankers, because you got to remember, once he's kicked them out of Germany, he's now introducing a new system. It's not going to take that long for other countries to realise, especially the ones that he eventually have to conquer. So when you look at how this usually has been used for world domination, this was a tremendous blow to them. Not just financially, because obviously they're no longer getting the financial earnings from Germany, but the fact that he's devised another financial system far superior to theirs, with less pain involved. That was an incredible, you know, they had to stop that.
I think there's a quote, it might be from Winston Churchill, and it says, if we can get Hitler to go back to the gold standard, then the war will end. And that was at the root of it, was the changing of the banking system and showing that you don't need usury, you don't need a gold standard. You just need a form of currency to use, and you can create enough for these works that need doing. And then when people pay for the use of those works, that can go back into the account and zero it. And you're making use of the ability of the nation to work then, rather than borrowing money from international financiers, all connected to gold. So he showed that it can work without usury. He made men into men and women into women. Encouraged men to work and to do manly tasks, and he encouraged women to be mothers.
Yeah, it didn't ever appeal to him to put women in on the front line. At the very end, he refused.
Yeah, even, you know, as we all know, there are always exceptions to the rule, and he did make room for exceptions to the rule.
Yep.
You had Hannah Reich in her aeroplane and jets and what have you, Hannah Reich. So it wasn't strictly women can't do this. If somebody showed they had the talent, then they were given the means so that they could pursue that, which is how things should be. I mean, you should be judged on merit, not like today. Well, we need to have a certain percentage of women doing this job just for the sake of equality.
There's no women there.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah, well, it just lowers the standards of everything. And what they did was they improved the standards. They lifted the standards up until they were leading the rest of the world. They were about 10 years in advance of the rest of the world technologically by the end of the war.
And it's not being anti-feminist, this. If a boardroom is full of 12 people today, if there was 12 men there, they'd insist to be another 6 women and, you know, 6 men leave. But in the way Adolf Hitler thinks and the way me and you think is that if there were 12 women of better ability than all the 12 men, this would be replaced. It isn't I don't think it's ever going to happen, but, you know, that actual thing isn't feminist.
Yeah, it's ability. It's all about ability and merit. And there are always exceptions to the rule. But the thing is, women think about things in a different way. They think they are more inclined to think about things emotionally. Men are more inclined to think about things logically. And if you've got a boardroom and you're working in that sphere of business, then you want men doing it. Women aren't going to be very good at it. And that's why we don't have women in the boardrooms.
Especially in the military as well, your men dominate the military, rightly so, because of the way they think, where women are more emotional.
And also, the men are then going to be looking out for the women, and they're going to feel an immediate need to be defensive of those women instead of being defensive of everybody else in the platoon.
Yeah.
And they're going to be distracted. You've got sexual distraction. They just seem to make these laws without any reference whatsoever to the fact that men have masses more testosterone than women, and therefore they get hijacked by sexual feelings a lot more than women, and distracted. There's so many affairs, so many marriages have broken up. It just causes so much damage having women at work. And
well, it's all to do with that breaking of the family. I heard the other day, you can go on the internet somewhere and just click a button and you're divorced.
Well, I was just going to say, today it's all about attacking the family, the primary unit of civilization. And one of the ways to do that is to promote feminism and promote equality. So they improved the people, they improved the family life, and they also improved the living conditions massively.
I've never seen a happier nation, to be honest. When you see the photographs, people have truly stunned who've been fed, a lot of propaganda. They're truly stunned at the photographs. Can't be acted.
Well, they built new villages, and they said, well, when we build a village, it needs to be near an industrial centre. If we've got something that comes out of the ground there, it needs to be processed there. And the village that is built around it needs to be working there, not travelling anywhere else. And we want limited transport, limited travel, and we want new places to be built around these areas, and we don't want them to get too big, because if they get too big like a city, people won't know one another. We want everybody to still have a sense of community. So they prevented them from being too large. They gave each dwelling a certain amount of land so that they could grow their own food. And for each child that the family had, they got 25% off the price of the house. So if they had four German children, they had no mortgage, just given to them for free. And that massively improved the living conditions and improved the sense of community. And it also provided lots of jobs for the German people, building houses for their other German people, for their kin. And what have we got today? Every single new house that is being built today is being built for a foreigner. Because we are not producing enough to reproduce ourselves. Each man and woman is producing less than two children. So that means that all the buildings that are here already, that's already far more than enough for our own people. Every single house is being built for a foreigner, and it's something like one house every 15 seconds that needs to be built for them. We're destroying the country to build houses for foreigners when we don't need to, whereas the Germans used the fact that they needed housing to encourage them to produce more Germans. They certainly didn't import Muslims to build them for them. And it's fascinating when you hear about all these different ways that they worked on improving conditions for them. They improved the infrastructure. So not just the houses, but the infrastructure. They built the autobahns. They built railways, didn't they?
Well, it's not only that today. I mean, it's sad, really. I mean, you go into any city, really, in Britain, and it's just full of immigrants. Because, you can't deny it. And it's been planned. I think it was there'd been talk about the Windrush era this week because of some complications they've had over some people getting deported. But that was started in 1948. That's 3 years after World War II had ended. And this has applied ever since all over Europe.
Well, the thing that gets me about that is they keep saying, oh, well, these people, they don't have any papers to be here. Well, if they don't have any papers to be here, then they're illegal immigrants. And then they say, oh, yes, but they've been here for decades. They've been here since they arrived on the Windrush. Well, so what? If they don't have any papers, they're illegal immigrants. Just the fact that they have squatted in this country for that amount of time doesn't mean that they should have any right to healthcare or housing or education or any of the rest of it. If they don't have the papers, they're illegal immigrants. And if they did come over here to do the jobs that we didn't want to do, surely those jobs have been done now. Surely that's finished with.
Is that time they went home? Excuses there, to be honest.
Well, yeah, of course not. It's all nonsense. Have you seen the videos from it, the Pathé videos? These people from the Commonwealth, they love the mother country even more than the native Brits. Makes me furious to see. Think that people went along with that. You can see from that that it's been a deliberate plan to replace us going all the way back to then, to before then. But after the war, they definitely increased it all. They thought, right, we've got rid of the last of the resistance. Now we can push forward with white genocide.
Well, Hitler, obviously, by giving money for loans to people to have more children, obviously knew the birth rate was low. He obviously knew what had gone on in the Rhineland after World War One, and so was very, very aware of the racial need to get the birth rate up.
And he succeeded as well. I mean, it's a good way to do it, isn't it? Saying, we'll give you a free house if you have four children. There was awards for good mothers.
Yeah.
It's in that Blue Cross. And they would also give mothers holidays. They would arrange for the young girls in the village to come and look after the children for a week or so, and look after the husband who was going out to work. And the mother could go on a retreat. And when she was on this retreat, she would learn how to do all the chores around the home. She would learn how to cook. She'd learn how to clean. She'd learn how to iron. She'd learn all these tips on how to look after the children. And it would be the older women that would teach her in case these girls didn't have grandmothers or they hadn't been taught quite right how to look after children. They could go on these retreats. They could have a nice long rest and away from the kids and learn from, like, the elders in the tribe, as it were, a really sensible way of doing things.
Yeah, I think this all stems from his love for his own mother. I mean, I think it's a path of love. I mean, he just absolutely adored the ground she walked on. So obviously, there's going to be some reaction to the way, once he's got power, to mould the women of Germany.
Right, it was clearly very, very important to him, and they'll try and say, "Oh, they hated women; they were chauvinists." But clearly not.
No,
that's what women, only women can produce children. That is the one thing that they can do that men can't do, and that's the way that they will find fulfillment, is through having children. The same as every female of every different species on Earth. Is created to create more of them. They weren't created to imitate the male and try and go out to work and copy the male and copy what the male does. That's what we have men for.
That's
ridiculous.
Right.
And they showed that by doing things in a different way, that's how you get success. That's how you improve everything for the nation. You improve the home life of the nation. Well, as well as improving the infrastructure and looking after the mothers, they became self-sufficient in the production of steel, aluminium, chemicals, petroleum, and general industrial production. And that is quite something, isn't it? Because I don't think they actually had any oil. They came out with their own biodiesel, didn't they? And their own version of rubber or something like that, Dennis?
Yeah, I think it was oil, weren't it? I think they managed to invent kind of a substitution for real oil, because they had no real oil themselves. In World War II, I think it was Romania what supplied them with the oil. So once when them fields went, then that's when they started to run out of petrol. But yeah, I think the funding of the scientists and the genius of the scientists. At that time, they were given freedom to flourish, I think. And that's why they were streets ahead of everybody.
Well, they even came out with their own painkillers, because they were cut off from having access.
Morphine, yeah.
Yeah, they were cut off from having access to the poppy fields. And of course, you're going to need strong painkillers if you're in the middle of a war. And they developed their own painkillers. They developed synthetic painkillers. That's where you get methadone from today, that they give to heroin addicts. That had to be invented by the Germans. So there was great...
Incredible, really. And especially at that time when they were at war.
Yeah, great leaps forward in chemistry and industry. Magnetic tape, the old cassette tapes, that was invented by them.
And all these patents were all stolen. There was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them stolen from, you know, by the Allies.
Tons of them. Was it a two-story house that was just filled with patents?
Yeah.
They advanced racial science. And this is something that wasn't really being done anymore. I mean, in America, you had books about race, especially after slavery, books about the differences between the whites and the blacks. Mm-hmm. And then you had some that were being written, I guess, in the 20s and the 30s in America, but nothing like the studies that were being done in Germany, where they were measuring everybody's heads to see the differences in skull shape, looking at the minute differences between just between the white nations themselves, let alone just between whites and blacks, and looking into the history of it and the history of where Europeans originally came from. Massive leaps forward in racial science and the history of race, something which is completely taboo now.
Yeah, well, we don't really want people investigating, you know, the mixes of the European races, do they?
No, they don't want us believing in race at all.
No, everyone's equal.
Well, he taught the Germans the value of struggle.
Yeah.
Which is in the title of the book, My Struggle, Mein Kampf. If you don't have struggle, then you don't have improvement. You need to have something to push against in order to improve yourself. Find out what you're really good at.
So you'll learn a lot more about yourself as well.
Yeah. And as we were saying, these times of war, they made these great leaps forward in technology because they had to. They had no other choice. So the struggle caused this improvement. And when you think that they took on the whole of the rest of the world, that's incredible. Little Germany against the whole of the rest of the world and managed to liberate most of Europe and fight off the Soviets and then America and then Britain. It's quite incredible when you think about it.
Yeah. Incredible.
They started a reformation of Jewish influence within the church, within Christianity. And that's what positive Christianity was. It was the removal of Jewish influences in Christianity. There's a book on it that was written about it and what the ideas were. And they had Rosenberg, who wrote his book, Myth of the 20th Century. And he talks in that about how the Jewish influence in Christianity needs to be removed. And, of course, that's something that we all agree with today. I think people that follow Christian identity have continued that one and continued looking at ways to remove Jewish influence from Christianity. But their version of it was different to Christian identity. But that is still the goal that they had, was removing the Jewish influence and not allowing Jews into it, and encouraging the view of Jesus as Jesus the Aryan, who got rid of the money changers.
Yeah, can I just say at this point, there was a comment, I was having a little bit of a ding-dong with somebody on YouTube, and he threw in what I call the cheap shot about the Catholic Church, because I stressed to a lot of people there were times when the Catholic Church was infiltrated, like it is today, but there were times it wasn't, and the time that it wasn't was under Hitler. And this guy came out with a cheap shot about the Catholic Church, etc. And I just, because he was supposed to be a National Socialist, and I just gently reminded him that at the end of World War II, out of the whole wide world, there was only one organisation who could have turned a blind eye because the war had been lost and just let thousands, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of National Socialists die. But instead, they got them out of Europe, give them the papers, give them the travel, free travel down to South America and saved thousands. The Catholic Church really deserved a little bit more respect from what this guy had given them. He obviously didn't believe that Hitler was a Christian, but, you know, kind of educated him to a certain extent.
Well, I think that's a really important point to make. If it wasn't for the Catholic Church, you know, none of them would have got to Argentina. None of them would have got out from Germany. It was all thanks to the Catholic Church. So if they'd been trying to get rid of the Catholic Church, that's not really the response you would expect, is it?
Not at all. No.
Well, they also encouraged traditions and pride in their European heritage. I mean, we've seen all these carnivals. We've seen that they celebrated the summer solstice as well as Christmas, as well as Easter, and they tried to bring in back these festivals that we used to have, some of them before we were Christian, and just to take pride in our history and our heritage. I think that this is part of the idea of removing the Jewish influence from Christianity. We're saying, well, look, we had a history before Christianity. We weren't always following Christianity. We were following these pagan ideas before. So why are they like bad words? They shouldn't be. It's part of our history. So they were encouraging that as well. I don't think they were encouraging people to worship Odin instead of God, but they were encouraging them to look back at our old traditions and to value them and to have respect for them. And not to think, oh, you know, all that should just be destroyed. You know, that's a Jewish idea, and that's because it's white. And the Jews want to destroy Christianity just as much. Anything that's white, they want to attack.
That's right.
The next one I've got on the list, they fought Bolshevism. They fought the Bolsheviks. Yeah, the only people to fight the Bolsheviks.
Yeah, the only country capable of fighting them. To be quite honest, you know, just that alone, you know, I mean, I'm convinced today that if they hadn't fought for them 6 years like they did, that we would be today as bad a position as what we are in. It would have been far worse even today for us, because their agenda, this genocide, would have been so much further down the line. Less had been revealed, so more people would have been unaware, and there's enough people unaware as it is, as we know. So that in itself, you know, should be celebrated. The fact that this man raised up a country, raised up its military from nothing. In fact, beyond minus nothing, when you looked at the Versailles Treaty, enough to fight these Bolsheviks and would have defeated them if not for Roosevelt.
You also united the rest of Europe in fighting against the Bolsheviks.
Europe,
you had the Waffen-SS, you had the legionaries in Latvia, you had the Waffen-SS in Finland, Waffen-SS in Norway. You even had a division from Britain that were fighting. Was it the Legion of St. George or something like that?
Yeah, called? Well, it's interesting that one, because John Amory, when he's, I've got some quotes on a video where he says, and he's well aware of the religious aspect to it all. So, granted, his father were a politician high up there, but you know, even at that time, he knew that, you know, to go fighting for Germany meant saving Christian standards.
It was a modern day crusade, and this is what I was saying, that there were volunteers from all these other countries in Europe that were prepared to fight with Germany against the Bolsheviks, whereas in Britain and the Allies, they were fighting on the side of the Bolsheviks. And yet you still have volunteers from these countries that would go and fight alongside the Germans. I forget how many there were. It was in the millions, wasn't it?
I don't think
the
true figure's ever been revealed, really, because I don't think it's in the interest of the victors to reveal how many were there, to be honest. But the point being that they were told that they would never fight against their own countrymen. They would be put on the Eastern Front to fight the Bolsheviks.
I'm sure de Grel said something in their millions.
Yeah. Well, it's never been portrayed like that, I don't think, over here.
And also, the ones that did fight against them, I know that the legionaries in Latvia, when it came to the Nuremberg trials, they said that they are absolved of taking part in any crimes against the Allies or the Jews, because they were just fighting on the Eastern Front. And they were fighting to defend their countries from the incoming Red Army, which would then occupy them. I mean, the Allies were saying, well, we're fighting against Germany to liberate these countries in Europe, but all they did was turn them over to the Red Army, and the Germans had been protecting them from the Red Army, and these units, these Waffen-SS units, were from these occupied countries fighting alongside the Germans. So they weren't liberated, they were invaded and occupied by the Soviets.
I always remember that speech of Churchill when he said, this war will define whether Christianity exists or not. Sort of on them lines. Which what he was saying was actually true, but it wasn't what people you know, I think he was saying, he was actually saying that Christianity could be wiped out in this war, and he's hoping it will be, and it nearly were.
Well, they've succeeded in completely perverting it now, after the war.
Yeah, that's right.
Moving back to Germany itself, they banned war profiteering, a lot of which had been going on in the First World War. In fact, I think they made it a death penalty for profiteering from the war. These speculators that were making money from white people killing one another, they made that the death penalty.
Yeah, well, that's all.
They also reformed the goals of the movie industry. If you look at Hollywood today and look at how degenerate it is and what sort of subject matter is, and then you compare that with the films of the Third Reich, you know, they've got a film exposing Freemasonry, they've got a film exposing the Rothschilds, how they came to get control of the money system, how they scammed the British government and the British banks by lying about a war that was happening overseas, how they exposed the Jews. They had that film, The Eternal Jew. It shows you how the Jews operate. They wouldn't allow the German people to see any German soldiers dying on film. They had to die off film. They didn't have any immorality in it. You compare that to what went on in Hollywood, where the Catholics were constantly having to get together and say, look, you know, we need to have censorship of what you're doing. In Germany, that all of that was prevented, and there was a deliberate goal of enlightening the audience, educating them and enlightening them as well as entertaining them.
Yeah, this is another case of the Catholic Church and the Third Reich thinking on the same lines. I think it's Michael E. Jones says that they tried to, in Hollywood, try to start perverting the film industry, just like they had done in Germany. But the Catholic Church was a lot stronger then managed to put a stop to it. But by the time the 60s came around, and this is, you know, maybe 15 years after World War II had ended, so things would be, you know, Vatican II had taken place and one or two other things. By the time the 60s was around, there was no opposition. And I think the very first, you mentioned the very first attempt to start the degenerate side of the movie industry was a Holocaust movie where a woman showed her breasts for the first time. And when there was no comeback of that particular movie, that opened the floodgates.
Yeah, that's what started it. If you compare films like Dark Forces, which is about Freemasonry, and the films that are about the Rothschilds, you know, it's the equivalent of communism by the back door being made by the state and put on in the cinema. You know, that's how, you know, groundbreaking it was to see this stuff on the big screen. It was exposing the world conspiracy.
Indeed.
Well, as well as that, they also banned pornography. And when we see these pictures of the book burnings, and we're told, oh, the Nazis burned all the books, that was students. That was students at a university, and they were burning pornography and Marxist pamphlets. But a lot of it was pornography. And you think today, I mean, it's in the news agents, it's all where kids can see it. The just normal magazines have degenerated into soft pornography, but that was all banned. Homosexuality was banned as well. I mean, that was banned in most countries, but they still had the death penalty for it in the SS if you were caught doing it.
Mm-hmm.
No tolerance for perversity, no tolerance for pornography. They encouraged marriage instead by giving rewards for people who get married. I don't know what they did about divorce law. Did they make it hard for women to divorce? Was it still banned at the time? What about divorce, Dennis? Do you know much about that?
I think they actually made it hard. I don't think they banned it, but somebody could put me right on that one. I have a feeling they just made it harder.
I think recently they've slackened up the laws. I think you had to have a really, really good reason to get divorced back then. And I think the whole of Europe has changed these laws, because it used to be something like 99% of marriages that would stay together. And now it's about 30%.
The Catholic Church was against divorce for a long, long time. Well into the 60s, I think.
They encouraged marriage, and they also ensured that every German was housed and had a job. 6 million people back to work.
Incredible.
Not 6 million Jews killed, 6 million people back to work. And when they were at work, there was a Clean Air Act. So they got rid of all the pollution. Something which the rest of Europe was really suffering from. You think of the smog that was in London, they say it was like pea soup. It was so thick you couldn't see. And yet in Germany, that was against the law. They had a Clean Air Act, and they had invented new technology so that they could actually clean the air up, and they prevented the chimneys from bursting out these noxious fumes everywhere. So you had a right to clean air. Yeah, a right to clean air. You had workers' rights, so they couldn't work for longer than a certain amount of time. They had holidays, paid leave. You didn't have paid leave anywhere else.
Well, again, someone said the other day that they got rid of the unions. Well, they didn't get rid of the unions because they didn't need the unions. The unions were a pain in many ways, communists as well. You know, when two fractions or three fractions sit down at a table and you know, agree on sensible things, then it all comes together, and the bosses were respected by the workers, the workers were respected by the bosses, and the government is happily lets them get on with it.
Well, they were like, well, workers don't interfere in what the bosses are doing, and bosses don't interfere in what the workers are doing. And the workers and the boss are both working on the same side and trying to do the best for both together. That, you know, that was the general idea. These unions pit one group of people against another group of people rather than trying to get them to cooperate. And as well as that, they also increased welfare for the old and the disabled. They looked after them. Do you remember that winter relief, the winter relief thing where they would people would make things so that they could sell, and they would collect clothing and give stuff out for free? None of this was going on in the other countries. The first country to actually come out with welfare for the sick, the old, and the disabled was Germany.
Yeah,
if you couldn't work, you were looked after, and if you could work, you were found a job.
Well, isn't it true that they wouldn't allow these holiday ships to dock anywhere in the UK because they didn't want the German workers telling them how wonderful life was?
Yeah, they didn't want the British people to see how good life was in Germany for the workers, so they banned the ships from docking in Britain.
Yeah.
Because the British people would have seen these luxury liners that the German workers were on.
Incredible.
You know, partially paid for when they were on their holidays. It's like the cars. Hitler wanted everyone to have a car. So they invented the Volkswagen Beetle and sold it at a reduced price. Maybe he was influenced by Henry Ford in that. I think he must have been influenced with him with the improvements to the workers' conditions, I think.
Yeah, for sure. You can see that.
Yeah, something he did as well. And they tried to teach lazy people the value of work. You can see that, can't you, with the on the gate of Auschwitz, "Arbeit macht frei," work makes you free. I mean, they say that that was a cynical sign to attack the Jews today, but it's a verse from the Bible.
Yeah, and it's their outlook on life.
Yeah, it's the German, you know, the German philosophy, isn't it? Work. That's where you'll find your value in life and contentment is in contributing to the rest of the nation.
Which is a problem today, because although people in Britain can be quite out working and they'll go out, and even now both sets of parents are out working long hours, they're coming back and they're not even able to afford a holiday. It's not right.
Yeah, the worker has to be worth his hire. It has to be paid well, but they tried to teach these lazy people the value of work, and that's what these camps were. That's why they were work camps. They were there to teach them to enjoy working, enjoy achieving something, enjoy contributing something. You know, that's what we're here for. The Jews just didn't understand it.
Which is why the gypsies were put in camps as well, because they didn't feel it right. They'd be wandering around the country when the country was at war. They should be at least contributing in some way.
Hey, it wasn't just Jews. It was people that didn't want to work. And then after the war, it was people that were a threat to the country, that had declared war on the country. obviously, mm-hmm. you're going to want to keep them out of the way for their own safety more than anything else, because, you know, the general people are going to want to attack them for being traitors, for declaring war on the country.
Exactly, yeah.
And they also banned intermarriage with non-whites and Jews. Mm-hmm. Again, this comes into the racial hygiene thing. They had miscegenation laws, which, you know, is going to be of benefit to every race to have those laws. It's going to be of benefit to whites.
It comes under that, you know, again, the birth rate up as well. I mean, all that comes under this as well. You know, he knew he has to get the birth rate up.
They also banned Marxism and reformed the education system.
Apparently so.
If you look at some of the books that they had in the education system, they were warning the children about what the Jews get up to.
Well, look at the education system today when you taught anal sex at 4.
Well, and what is it they should be teaching young girls today? They should be teaching them about the threat that Muslims pose to them. You know, we've got a direct result of them being taught that everybody is the same. They get groomed by Muslims, and they're not told that the Muslim is the one that they should be most fearful of. That's the one they should be most careful and guarded around. And they don't. They tell them they should be extending the hand of friendship to them. It's racist to think otherwise. They taught the complete opposite. They were actually given a good education in Germany on important things.
Yeah. Life values.
Yeah, they also built new churches.
That's right.
Especially in the Ukraine. Hundreds of churches they built.
Well, this is a big myth about Germany and Hitler not, you know, liking religion. It's ridiculous, but it's propaganda, and it was used, but obviously because the armies from America and Britain were full of Christians.
And what did the Soviets do? Well, the Soviets blew up churches. They turned them into cinemas, turned them into auditoriums, and they built hundreds of new synagogues.
Yeah, there's a surprise.
Yeah, you know, it's like a mirror opposite, isn't it?
Oh, totally, yeah. It's evil and good. Any clearer?
Complete opposite of National Socialism was going on in the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
The National Socialists fought to the very end, and Adolf Hitler stayed the course until the very end. And instead of allowing himself to be captured, like the good captain, he went down with his ship, and he fell upon his sword, just like all the heroic warriors of history. And that was the noble thing to do, was to fall on your sword. Because if you were captured, you had two choices. You would either be a slave or you would die. And the noble thing to do would be to die rather than to accept that you'd been given your life at the hands of your oppressor. It was a far more noble and brave and courageous thing to do to die than to allow that to happen. Plus, there was the chance of his body being desecrated, like happened to Mussolini. Yeah.
And Gaddafi.
Gaddafi, you know, the people today would say, oh, look at him, he killed himself in the end. He was a madman. No, he was honourable.
Well, to be honest, I've always been happy with that scenario, because the thought of him being captured and tortured and everything else, what would have happened to him should the Bolsheviks had captured him in the bunker, and Eva Braun, obviously, again, what happened to Mussolini's girlfriend doesn't bear thinking about. So I've always been content with that scenario, to be honest, even though some don't believe him, think he escaped or whatever.
Yeah, it makes complete sense to me that he would end his life rather than risk being captured. It fits in with everything that he wrote and everything that he said. The idea that he do the sneaky thing and escape to a new life in Argentina, that's a very Jewish thing to do, I would suggest. Run out the rest of them.
If you see the footage of him, remember when he's going around shaking the hands of these young soldiers who've been fighting and have been awarded medals, you see the condition of him. He's not, doesn't look to be in the greatest health. So, you know, he's probably resigned to the fact that, you know, it's going to end here. I've always felt that anyway.
Yeah, you can see he was quite badly injured by the end.
Yeah, the bomb near the end.
Near the end. He had the noblest army in the world. And they really were noble. If you look at the laws that they had, the rules that they had, they weren't to, if any of them were caught stealing off any of the people that they just won a battle against, you know, that was court-martial, that was death penalty. And yet, when the Red Army came in and the Americans came in, they stole all their watches.
Yeah, raped all the women.
Yeah, raped the stole. You know, these watches that they had, they'd been handed to them by their grandfather, handed to their father, handed to them. And these were family heirlooms. A very important cultural item was to have your father's watch in Germany. And they stole them all. And they stole them all from an army that was not known for stealing anything. All this nonsense today about them stealing artworks and all these Hollywood movies, they are complete nonsense. They didn't steal anything. They protected artworks from the bombs and put them in safe areas so that they wouldn't get destroyed. But they certainly didn't steal them. They purchased things back from the Jews who shouldn't have had them. They purchased the farmland back. They purchased back treasures that should have belonged to the nation rather than belonging to the Jews. And yet Hollywood today will make out that they stole them all. Yet there are records of them paying for it.
Well, thankfully, I think a lot more people today now can see through the Hollywood myth. I'm pretty sure there's still people fall for it, for sure. But I think, you know, in the last maybe 5 years, something like that, I think people have more and more seen what Hollywood has been. I like to think so, anyway.
Oh, definitely. I think your documentaries help with that as well, Dennis. The final one that I've got here is that he began a new aristocracy of knights in the SS. If they had continued, we would have had a new aristocracy that would have been mentally fit, physically fit. They would have been the best examples that we could have of human beings. And they were taught to be the most noble. They were taught to be the most honourable. Their word was their honour. If you look at the oaths that they swore and the way that they were taught to be, they were, you know, they would have been absolute heroes. And again, their name is completely slandered today, and they're made out to be dreadful people, absolute terrible people that just wanted to kill Jews. And there were reports of them, you know, standing up for Jews and standing up for corruption. And if one of these SS officers arrived at the camp, then there certainly wouldn't have been any mistreatment of the prisoners. You know, nothing to prevent
Leon de Gogh. Yeah, Leon de Gogh was a great depth to explain the nobility of the SS in a couple of videos at least.
Well, that was the whole idea of it, was to create a new nobility that that was worthy of the title, rather than what we have today. The nobility is the people with the most money, and the people with the most money are Jews, and they bought their titles, and most of them are absolute scum. About 1 in 1,000, if that, are any good. I can only think of one in the House of Lords that's any good, and I only discovered that recently. and that's our nobles now. That's our aristocracy. So what Hitler was doing was creating a new one.
Well, right on.
At least we can say, at least, you know, we have had all of this, so we can see that it does work. National Socialism does work. These theories have been shown to, you know, to have their fulfillment in practice. And it's just an absolute tragedy that
it's sad, yeah, absolutely.
That we fought. But at least on this day, on Adolf Hitler's birthday, we can remember his many triumphs and give thanks to God that at least we did have him, and he was allowed to shine for that brief 10 or 11 years. And we pray that the German people themselves will wake up to their history and to what a great man he really was one day, soon, I hope.
Couldn't have put it better myself, Sven.
Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Dennis. Okay. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Don't forget, we do require donations to keep Radio Aryan going, and we have got a Bitcoin wallet in the sidebar. We will be back next week with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you all have a great weekend ahead of you. Thank you.
you're tuned into